Coming up next, WWER presents Your Care Partners, a show dedicated to providing support and education to our community about caregiving. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Experienced professional caregivers Jill White and Marty Allman have casual conversations about care, offering advice and tips to help navigate caring for others. Jill White is a certified dementia practitioner and an Alzheimer's Association facilitator for caregiver support groups with over 30 years' experience working in long-term care. Marty Allman is certified as a master trainer for the Best Friends approach to Alzheimer's. She is a certified psychiatric nursing assistant with over 20 years' experience working in long-term care.
Welcome to Your Care Partners on WWER 88.1 FM, listener-supported radio. I'm Marty Allman.
I'm Jill White.
And we're Your Care Partners. Today, we have a special guest, Andrea Hess. Andrea is a licensed... Andrea, explain your license to me. I'm sorry. Licensed...
professional counselor.
Sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. An LPC. It's okay.
She's an LPC. And Andrea does compassion fatigue training. And I found this very interesting. And Andrea and I have known each other for years, really a long time.
About 20 years.
Yeah. Friends. And we met through mutual friends and, yeah. So here we are. It's just kind of interesting how things come back around. And so we were going to just interview Andrea and see if she's got some insights for us, for caregivers. And I'd like to just start out, Andrea, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go into what is compassion fatigue.
Okay. Well, first, thank you so much for allowing this platform, because it's something that is I'm very passionate about compassion fatigue, which sounds funny, but it's just something that is really new in the field of self-care and collaborating self-care with professional and personal things in our lives. So I am currently work for Prince William County's Community Services Board as a clinician, as a therapist in the crisis, basically in the crisis world. It's called emergency services. And so in that world of the CSB, I was afforded the opportunity to take a training to be a compassion fatigue trainer. And that was, I feel like that was right around 2014 or 2015. And since then, I've been able to present, because it's a presentation versus an actual, like, that's my everyday job. And I've done presentations for mental health workers, for 911 dispatchers, for disaster relief workers, for Commonwealth attorneys, basically anybody, defense attorneys as well, anybody who is in what I would consider like the helping profession. And it may seem, think of like, really, lawyers are a helping profession? I know it sounds, that sounds super weird, but it's really, especially for like the defense attorneys, because they hear these stories of their clients, and there's usually a lot of trauma in their livelihood, and unfortunately, and so it can cause some compassion fatigue and things like that, and burnout and everything. So that's kind of how I got into this topic.
And so what is compassion fatigue?
Compassion fatigue is, and they use this, it's a deep erosion actually of our ability to kind of hear one more story, to hear one more sad thing, and it doesn't happen overnight, and it happens usually over several weeks or several months. And it's not something that also just goes away overnight or anything like that. And, you know, usually you don't really even recognize you have compassion fatigue. A lot of times people around you will notice your behaviors rather than you're noticing your behaviors. And usually, again, it's not something that most people are even aware of. And it can take a few months to become aware of it. And then again, a few months to kind of figure out how to change some things in your way of doing things and seeing things and, you know, asking yourself, you know, different questions of what usually around control and what you have control over and what you don't have control over and reminding ourselves of those things. And a lot of times in the helping profession, people were often calling what they were feeling compassion fatigue, when in reality, it was like burnout. And it was really fascinating to really dive into this topic and see how the two often are related.
So again, there's a lot of overlap, like a Venn diagram and, you know, our connection between burnout and compassion fatigue. And a lot of times someone who has burnout may end up going down the path of compassion fatigue. Oftentimes that's what happens first. But one of the things that was really fascinating, and this I hope will maybe speak to your audience, is that burnout is about our systems. It's about, and especially if we're thinking like in the helping profession, you know, burnout is about office space or not having the right equipment or not having a supportive supervisor or being asked to do three jobs, you know, three people's jobs, but you're the only one, or mandates, you know, that are handed down from
yes,
or the state or Medicaid or Medicare. You know, those are the things that are really over time can cause that burnout. So I think of, you know, burnout is really about your environment. It's usually about your work environment or your systems environment versus about the people that you're wanting to help and you care about. So it's huge. It's again, I hope that that will be almost a game changer for people to think like that, because a lot of times what happens in burnout, believe it or not, is that we start to then question ourselves. We start to question, am I a bad person? Am I, you know, why don't I want to help it? Like, why don't I want to help people? Why is this, you know, bothering me? Or, and maybe I need to get out of this job, or maybe I need to move away, or maybe I need to change something because I just, you know, I feel broken. There's, again, there's something wrong with me type of thing. And versus, you know, compassion fatigue is much more about, again, I can have burnout all day long and still want to help people. I can have burnout. I can be mad at Medicaid and Medicare and the system and what have you all day long. And someone's in crisis and my heart is still there and wanting to help them. Having the combination of burnout, like I hate my job, I hate whatever, and I don't want to help people again, is that would be the compassion fatigue part. And to ask, you know, oneself is like, why can't I? And so So part of the compassion fatigue training is really identifying and understanding and defining the differences between burnout and compassion fatigue. And there's a couple other tenets as well of compassion fatigue, which is something called moral distress, which is when our system that we are, you know, required to be in or live in and work in is conflicting with our morals and values.
Mm. Or so work in, right, Marty? Or working
yeah.
in.
And working in, yeah.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. It almost reminds me of the nature versus nurture. One's internal, internally focused and one's externally focused. And you only have control over some of that.
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it's interesting how when people are becoming compassion fatigue, when they actually haven't gotten there yet, they start to overcompensate actually and try to help more and right. And get involved more.
Yep.
I'm laughing and I'm just going to interrupt for a second because Jill and I had a conversation. We did a podcast about how, you know, we've noticed with family caregivers that they overdo things for their family members. And then what happens is the family member loses the ability or the desire to do things for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of, so that's really interesting. I didn't realize that that was happening to them. Mm-hmm. You know, like for me, I looked at it like, wow, this person, you know, this person is just really in a hurry or they're just really trying to take control of the situation. But I didn't realize that it was a symptom of compassion fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
And then the burnout person will be the one that pulls away. Like, I just can't, they shut down. you know? And so it's interesting how one pushes forward, one pulls away, but the bottom line is they're both going down.
Right.
Just a different way.
Right. And the burnout, especially in a community setting, is the person that you talked about before, Marty, that comes in and just destroys everyone else's day and mood.
Go, oh, okay, maybe this person has burnout. It's not so much that they're just a bad person or a frustrating person or whatever. It's like, okay, it's what they've got going on. And then taking that even a step further is give color chart, you know, green, yellow, orange, and red. And
talk about green being something we never achieve because that's your vacation mindset, you know, and yellow is good. Yellow is actually caution. Mm-hmm. That's what you do when you drive, right? You don't just drive in this la la land, hopefully. And then there's orange and red. And when you see those coworkers and when they've had the same training, or you see these other folks that have had the same training, you can go, oh, you're looking a little orange. Is everything okay? And it's so less defensive than saying, what's wrong with you? You have this you've got this big chip on your shoulder, you know, and it's a common language that, again, doesn't seem. And I've said it to coworkers and they'll be like, oh, I haven't had my coffee yet. You know, and it'll be something just as simple as that. And again, they don't even recognize a lot. And sadly, in compassion fatigue and burnout, a person doesn't know. They don't realize that they're literally walking around like Pigpen. You know, some of my warning signs are that I start cussing a lot more. I mean, I already kind of cuss, usually for humor. But when I'm now cussing and just, you know, at everybody, and then I'm like, oh, that's one of my ways to know. Or I'm not, you know, engaging with friends. I tend to be an extrovert. Or, you know, so I start to go, you know, I've been isolating more. I've been, you know, cussing a lot more, or those types of things. I realize that something's going on inside of me. And this is with having this training, you know, like, I have so much awareness about burnout and compassion fatigue, and it still happens because it's normal. I mean, it's normal. And one of the best things, I have this quote that I won't be able to do very well, but that, you know, having an expectation that we can, that the things we hear and deal with and everything is not going to affect us is as silly as thinking we can walk through water and not get wet. Mm-hmm. It's normal. All of this is normal. Of course, people are going to feel they're not giving enough. Of course, people are going to feel like, what can I do more? Of course, people are going to feel I'm a bad caretaker, a bad parent, a bad mom, all of these things. Of course, because these are difficult times with caring for individuals with needs. Of course, you're going to have those things. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. And it's normal. And now that once you can be aware of that, that it's normal and so forth, you can kind of start to do things differently, or to try to do things differently.
I have just a question to ask you, because we were in our previous podcast, we were talking about patience and we were talking about guilt that, you know, a caregiver may have, like, you know, while they're taking care of someone, you know, maybe they realize they weren't as patient as they should have been, and carrying around that guilt and how that they have to let that go. And I didn't know if you could expand on that or a way to, you know, help them let that go.
Yeah. And I don't know if they're ever going to be able to let it go. And the reason that is because it's like when someone dies, you know, do we ever really get over it? No. We just learn to manage, you know. And you said a word that I try to keep out of my vocabulary, and it's the word should. Where they should do this, because versus they could. Like, I could say to myself, like, oh, I should have seen that, or I should have done that, you know, and should is, that to me, kind of a shaming word, because I'm shaming myself now, right? I am shaming that I did something wrong. So I try to incorporate the word could, like, oh, I've maybe, you know, could I have done more, or could I have done, you know, instead of should I have done more. And we kind of use it. We say, like, we have to be careful we don't should all over ourselves, you know, because next thing you know, you're all dirty, you know,
right? So you're covered in shoulds.
I use this metaphor more or less. And so try to visualize a champagne tower. I mean, have you ever seen like a champagne tower, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The bartender pour does not go around into each glass and fill it. What does he do? He fills the top one.
Yeah.
And it all starts. And guess what? It all gets taken care of just one filling up the top. And I always say, you are the top. these other glasses below are your loved ones, your work, your finances, your mind, body, spirit, you know, all these things that we all want to try to take care of. But if we try to take care of individual glasses like that, we'll be exhausted.
I was going to say, Marty has, we call it parachutes. You need to have parachutes, everyone in your network, that when you need to grab somebody, when you're soaring through the air, flailing, you need to pull a ripcord and get another person with a parachute to help you out, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And you need to have those, mm-hmm. right? You can't have just one parachute, because what if that parachute is not accessible? You know, I say the same thing, like always have like several people mm-hmm. to be able to rely and reach out to and things like that. And if they don't respond, that's okay, you know, because that's why you have more, you know?
Exactly.
And also feel like you always have to respond. You know, I also talk a lot about, you know, we all have to go to the amusement park for whatever reason, but we don't have to get on the roller coaster. That's why they put that lovely bench there. I'm gonna be right here, you know, and I'm still here because I have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Important things.
So, Andrea, do you find once people kind of accept the understanding of what that compassionate fatigue is, they're more open then to trying to fix it or help themselves move forward? How does that work?
All the above. Sometimes just having the knowledge and understanding can be a huge relief for people, and that in of itself, they stop guilting themselves as much, you know? So sometimes just having that knowledge and understanding of what it is can be a huge relief. And then also, you know, remembering like, oh, I do need to take care of myself or else, you know, we're all going to be thirsty, and helping people have a little bit of like what I call a cognitive restructuring. So, you know, we all want things, right? Of course, you know, and we all want things to be a certain way. And we'll often find ourselves banging our head into a wall because it's not happening. And I've had to do this myself. When I keep going forward, and I'm not getting anywhere, I have to take a step back and go, okay, well, this is what I want. And then I'll go, now what can I live with? So even that mindset, and usually when I do this in a training, because weight seems to be pretty universal, that not most people don't weigh what they want to weigh. And so I'll say, you know, what, and I tell people, I don't want to know the answer, you know, but ask, you know, right? Ask yourself, what do you want to weigh? What do you want to weigh? You know, and I'm like, you know, and then I say, okay, now what can you live with? And it's never the same number. You know, it's not. It's, and again, and I tell this with family members a lot, you know, especially when they're wanting their family member to do something, right? And it's like, why don't they, you know, why? My stepfather just kept getting so frustrated that my mom kept putting the butter in a cabinet, right? Because she was advancing in her Alzheimer's and stuff. And we're like, well, we know that you want her to just leave it here, but, you know, like, well, what can you live with, Bob? You know, is it really hurting anything that the butter is in the cabinet in the pantry? No. So, but, you know, it's almost like pick your battles. But mm-hmm. again, instead of saying pick your battles, it's saying, well, what is it you want and what can you live with? And that helped him also take a sigh of relief, because it also felt some pressure coming off of him mm-hmm. that everything did not have to be just this certain way.
Yeah, I think that, and that goes back to the caregiver control. You're so desperately trying to control the environment, control the person, control everything that's going on, that you end up losing control over everything in your life, you know?
That's exactly it. And that's what we go back to, you know, what do you actually have control over? You know, what is it you want? What is it you can live with? And what do you have control over and what don't you have control over? We don't have control over the Medicaid and Medicare system, you know, because if we did, it wouldn't look like this.
True. We were talking the other day about, you know, someone trying to get out the door to go to a doctor's appointment and, you know, things are just not moving like as quickly as they should, and you're going to be late for the doctor's appointment. You're finding yourself losing patients, and that kind of goes along with just cancel the doctor's appointment. If it's not, you know, if it's not a treatment or something like that, and it's just kind of a getting a baseline of where this person is, cancel the appointment. Don't go to church if it's, you know, if you're already frustrated before you get out the door. So I'm glad that you brought that up, that what can you live with? I think that's a really great thing for caregivers to
kind of put in their parachute or and write it down in their journal.
They need to lower the bar a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The bar's too high. It can't be that high anymore, you know?
Right.
I went to a conference, and I'm in part of this 40-hour training we do with police. We have the sheriff's office come in, and they do a presentation on Alzheimer's dementia, and they talk about Project Lifesaver. And I've always just found it, every time I watch it, I learn something new. And I had the opportunity to go to a conference, and somebody showed, and it was like a 3.5-minute video, maybe a little cartoon of, you know, how the brain is with Alzheimer's, and it's off of the Alzheimer's Association. And it was like this humongous light bulb for me. It was like, I mean, you know, you watch this person progress, you know, and they talk about in this presentation, not the commercial or the video one, but, you know, you take someone, you take their life, you know, and you just start erasing it, oh, you know, slowly on this whiteboard, you know, and back until they're like zero, until they can no longer, when they're an infant now. And so I'm seeing my mom have that progression, and I get it up here, you know, right? And then when I watched this video again, it was just like, so to me also, like, education is so helpful that if people—
Two thumbs up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and again, it's a simple video. Like, it's this 3.5-minute video that I was like, or even when that the sheriff's office said, you know, oh, well, here's all the things on their life, you know, and you just start erasing backwards. And it was like, oh, okay, my mom is basically now she believes she's, you know, like 45 years old. She's wanting to go back to Texas because that's where she remembers being. And it's like, okay, this makes so much sense. And it's so simple. I mean, it's such a simple concept. And yet, and I shared that with my sister. I shared it with my stepdad, and they were both like, oh my gosh, this is really helpful. Cause again, if you don't have that education, you don't have those little bits, you are going to want to over control or over function and not recognize that what's actually the progression of the disease.
Yeah. You have given us so much, so much information. We could talk for hours on this. And I think that's really, you kind of hit a key point. One of the reasons why Jill and I are doing this is because nobody wakes up knowing how to be a caregiver. Nobody wakes up knowing, you know, how to deal with another person's emotions or physical problems or whatever. You know, we all, regardless of if it's a family member or somebody you're working with, you know, in the professional field, we all need education. We all need to continue to learn, and we can learn from each other. So I, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're doing this. And I hate to say this, but we're running out of time, Andrea. And we hope that you would like to come back and talk with us, because you've given us, I mean, so many tools, right, Jill?
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yeah. We definitely need a few more hours with you.
We'll have to come back in 6 months, and maybe if people respond to this and, you know, ask people if there's questions or something, and to maybe come back in like 6 months and be able to go through that again. So
yeah, that's wonderful. And Andrea, with your compassion fatigue training, you do go out and you do presentations. If someone is interested in having you maybe come and do a presentation for them at their workplace or their church, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Probably to email me, and I'll give you my work email. So it's A for Andrea, Hess, H-E-S-S, at pwcgov.org.
Thank you so much, Andrea. We can't thank you enough. I'm getting choked up. Because I think your information is really going to help a lot of people.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And that's why I'm passionate about it, because it's just, you know, it's great stuff. So,
okay.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. And we're going to sign off shortly. If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen at iHeartRadio or WWER 88.1 FM. Or online at wwer.org, or go to anchor.fm/yourcarepartners/episodes. Our Anchor podcast is listener supported. Our podcasts are also available on YouTube and Spotify. And please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, which is carepartners@wwer.org and take care of yourself. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place
yours. If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen online at wwer.org.
Please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, carepartners@wwer.org.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.